Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Herman Pretorius. Let's get into the first news story of today. And we're going to be talking a little bit about Starlink, the internet service provider, or the internet service infrastructure company that provides internet via satellite. Now, there's been a lot of talk for a long time that they were interested in entering the South African market, but apparently it was at first sort of rumored that they were being kept out by BEE. That was confirmed later by, Elon Musk tweeted about it, but also there were statements from the company itself saying that the ownership laws in South Africa were holding back any potential investment in the country. And now Starlink has given a pretty basic choice, and I think they've done a very clever thing in this, to the South African government. In a letter to Industry, Trade and Competition Minister Parks Tau, Starlink's Senior Director of Market Access has said, let us in under the equity equivalent investment programs instead of the 30% local ownership requirements, and we'll transform education connectivity, is what they say in their letter. Quoting from it, today millions of children are being denied access to education resources because South African broadband networks do not extend to most rural parts of the country. They offer a deal where they will provide 5,000 rural schools in South Africa complete internet free internet services from their Starlink terminals with installation and maintenance supported through local South African companies. But they will only do this if they don't have to give up an ownership share of the company to a BEE partner. And so, Herman, I think the reason this is so useful for us in the country is because it provides the government with a very, very clear choice. You can either have 30% of the Starlink local stake given to a local investor who is politically connected, who is the, you know, the right color, all these requirements that government loves to put on things, or you can help poor kids in the most rural parts of the country get a better education. It's as simple as that.
Absolutely. And from the IR side, that's part of why we've been campaigning on this cost of BEE point, where we've looked at procurement costs at the and using the research done by Gabriel Krauser, showing what the inflated costs are in terms of state procurement. But we've also taken the campaign to the private sector, asking them, you know, how much are you having to jack up your prices to meet these racial targets with the employment equity or BEE certification. And one of the components of our campaigning over the last few months has been to engage with parliamentarians and members of the government, including Minister Solly Malatsi, on this question of how much is BEE costing South Africa? Because we make exactly this point. It's very pleasing to see it echoed in something as high profile as this type of correspondence, because it makes the binary so clear. Either you can have value extraction or value addition. That's really the only decision you have to make in terms of a question like this. Do you want value extraction, BEE, making sure that the tendrepreneurial class can maintain their presence at the top of the economic food chain by extracting, by putting in place barriers? Or you could go the other direction and say, look, these companies come into the country with vast resources. There's a role for them to play. There is something like constructive corporate citizenship that doesn't enrich a few hundred people at the top of the food chain with what a trillion rand, as Professor William Gumede has calculated recently. So it's the exact question. I love the binary. It is the binary of how much of South Africa's future, South Africa's job aspirations, South Africa's socioeconomic aspirations, how much of that will government be willing to put on the altar of BEE and sacrifice to the gods of racial representation? And I'm very excited that Starlink has gone for this angle. I think it's exactly right. And if they win this argument, then, you know, the barriers can start crumbling. But if they lose the argument, if government says no, we don't want 5,000 schools to get access to free internet services, we would rather enrich a few cadres and cronies at the top, well, then that's also an answer. It's a win-win situation. Either we get actually value addition, or we get the value extraction exposed for the cynical thing, and the cynical and destructive thing that it is.
That's exactly right. The choice is very clear: tenderpreneur class or rural kids. Let's hope the government chooses wisely. Okay, let's go on to our next story. And this is, one of those little good news pieces that appeared in the media recently. It tells the story of an entrepreneur, guy from Ekurhuleni, Tsepo Setsosa, who was doing, he was working as like an entertainer and it's like a DJ and a stand-up comic. And then COVID hit and things got rough. There were no gigs and he was looking to make some money. Well, he realized that he could simply turn to a childhood staple and start selling pup porridge. He said, in speaking to the media, "I used to drop my father off in the Joburg CBD every day. And as I was doing so one day, I realized that the only grab-and-go food for breakfast was fat cakes and scones. I noticed there was a gap in the market. Pup was the only way I thought I could stand out. So I grabbed a pot in my gas stove and headed to the CBD. Luckily, it was winter and I started, and that was an advantage because I got sold two big pots in 45 minutes. He then went on to start developing this into a business of basically takeaway pup products for people. He has now created a business which he runs as sort of a side gig. He continues to work in various entertainment stuff. He said he learned the basic skills of hustling from his mother, who would do informal food sales after church. Or when he was 11, he would have to go out and do door-to-door sellings with his siblings to assist their mom. And this story contains, I think, the first ever positive description I've seen of activities from the National Youth Development Agency, which is quite saying something. He said the National Youth Development Agency was helpful in assisting with training in part of the capital, and he learned about writing his business plan from their program. He said his goal is to create something that lives beyond him. I want my product to be in households across Africa. He currently employs 6 permanent workers and 7 part-time workers. So, you know, not a huge business, but definitely helping the lives of ordinary people. Now, there are some questions that are not answered by this story. And the main one to me is he in compliance with all the rules and regulations? We've seen many times that, you know, you have successful entrepreneurs like this, and then it turns out that there are heaps of government regulations that they are not in compliance with that shouldn't actually be there in the first place. We are actually shockingly over-regulated in South Africa when it comes to businesses. And many times small businesses don't necessarily feel it because enforcement is so poor. We saw this with all the drama around the kids who got poisoned, and blamed the spaza shops, where the discussion suddenly kind of realized that all these spaza shops didn't have operating licenses, they hadn't complied with all these food codes and things like that. And the reality is that, you know, this actually kind of creates a sword hanging over the heads of every small business person in the country, which is, yeah, you know, 9 times out of 10, like, you can operate your business. But if you A, start to get bigger, or B, just get unlucky, suddenly you've got metro cops taking away your stuff, kicking everything. So, Herman, what do you make of this story? I mean, nice story. Guy, you know, has made a business out of necessity. He's selling food. He's creating jobs. All that good stuff. But one feels like there's still lost potential here.
Absolutely. And what strikes me is just that this sort of story should be wonderful, but it should be commonplace. The fact that it is newsworthy is sort of depressing. The fact township guy or guy from poorer background build successful business, that should be so run of the mill to be welcomed, to be congratulated, to be celebrated, but not to be reported on. That's how you know you're in a country that has its priorities right, where news is actually exceptional. And the sad thing is, I suspect that there are millions of people who have the similar ability, need, incentives, potential, understanding for a million small businesses like this to bloom, But it's the regulations. It is the obstacles in the way of this type of innovative entrepreneurialism that really just becomes depressing. I can't remember the exact details of the story, but a few years ago, it might have been during COVID or just after, there was a story of a guy in Sandton who made sandwiches and sold them near corporate buildings during lunch hour. He took his sort of the few grant, the 100 rand grants he could, pooled them and started making and selling sandwiches and built up this little business with a revenue of a few thousand rand a month. I think it might have reached 20,000 rand a month revenue at some point. But then he was stopped because he didn't have the right permit to sell these sandwiches. And it's that sort of thinking that is so depressing, because there's the hidden cost of these regulations. How many other rising pop sellers, entrepreneurs, do we have in this country? How many more Tsepo Sithosas do we have that are just forgotten, left about by pointless regulations? Now, that isn't to say that regulations shouldn't exist. The food security and food safety stuff you mentioned with the kids getting poisoned, critical. But there's a level, there's a Goldilocks zone where regulations are useful, constructive, and also not a burden to actually getting opportunity.
And there's another layer to this too, which is oftentimes when you do try to follow the rules and apply for your permit or apply for your license, whatever it is, good luck dealing with the bureaucracy. You can wait ages, you can be messed around, you can get bribes extracted from you. There's just all these other sort of additional costs and things that come in the way if you try to follow the rules, which just incentivizes this sort of gray informal market type behavior where everyone can create a business and they'll probably get by fine, but they can't ever grow it above a certain size. They can't ever formalize it to a certain size. It's always just sort of keeping it's like a trap to keep people in kind of poverty and mediocrity rather than allowing them to, you know, truly embrace their potential.
And that sort of obstructionism really cuts through every sector of the economy, whether it is someone just trying to get the goods to be able to sell stuff legally in the inner city like sandwiches or pub, or whether it is a development of a high rise or urban affordable residential housing. I spoke to someone the other day who said to me that they've just finished a building in Cape Town and in Johannesburg, and the differences were particularly notable in the bureaucratic process, because you get funding to build a high rise, 500 million rand or whatever the case may be. And the moment you have that financing, the interests start running. If you are then dealing with a slow, unpredictable, uncooperative, blunder-filled process, that financing interest starts biting very quickly without you being anywhere closer to the point of that money starting to earn a profit. But if you're in a system where regulations are simple, where processes are followed, where basic bureaucratic functions are predictable and understandable, you add to every level of the economy, from your smallest economic participant to your largest, you add the ease of doing business, the ease of growing, the ease of adding value and earning an honest income. And looking towards the local government elections in the next 2 years, it's critical. It's critical that the ease of doing business in terms of a regulatory framework and the bureaucratic makeup that determines whether a business can operate or not, that must become a hot topic, that must become critical, because I don't think people quite understand how important at every level this sort of regulatory understanding and predictability is, from a few hundred rand to get a thing going to a few million rand to get an investment or not.
All right, and keeping on our theme of regulation, The Minister of Agriculture, John Steen, has been praised by the CEO of the Pick and Pay retail group, Sean Summers, who says that the minister has made a very good decision by revoking the designation of Leaf Services as an assignee responsible for inspecting grain and grain products in South Africa, saying that this has saved the industry millions of rands in unnecessary costs. Steenhuisen was lobbied by a lot of industry players to cancel this contract. And the Sean Summers from Pick and Pay said, when applying this to Pick and Pay alone, the inspection methodology proposed by Leaf Services, which included three annual inspectors at each of our 920 stores across the country, raised significant concerns. The sampling process would have required duplicate samples from each patch and size of bread drawn from the point of sale. Given that our batch codes are determined by the day's production, this methodology would have substantially increased operational complexity and cost for our business. Pick and Pay said that no research had been conducted at all to establish the level of compliance in the baking industry to see if there was an actual need to conduct inspections in the first place. He said, quote, since foundation, we have baked and sold billions of loaves of bread across our stores consistently of high quality. We have never encountered issues with compliance. He says that the Pick and Pay and other big retailers are not poisoning their customers with terrible bread. So they don't need to be inspected. He says that this is going to save Pick and Pay by itself 10 million rand a year. And I think this is a good example of, you say, okay, well, food safety concern here sounds good on paper, but is it actually necessary? And I would argue in the cases of baked loaves of bread, probably not, particularly when there hasn't been an inspector up till now and we haven't had mass poisonings from bad bread.
And I think one can look at the story at two levels. Number one, there's the simple politics of it. For a minister to be able to say that I've stopped a hike in the price of bread, that's good politics. It's not sexy. It's not going to necessarily get you a week's coverage of positive headlines. But political trust and electoral credibility is won over time. It isn't something that happens overnight. And if a party like the DA, like Steenhuisen, in this case, can use the political capital they have to say, look, the grocery basket politics is where we're at. Not just, the VAT debate where we're on the right side of do we want higher or lower taxes, but what in the grocery basket can we actually do something about? Can we make potatoes less expensive? Can we make tomatoes less expensive? Can we make bread less expensive? Can we make rice less expensive? Eggs, all milk, all of these staples that really form the basis of the grocery basket throughout, the 20th century and beyond. That is just decent politics and good governance. It is an example of policy work being done well. On the other hand, I think we see something of a fundamental ideological assumption here on why this was necessary in the first place. If you move from the assumption that consumers are exploited whenever they participate in the market, then of course you're going to have to come to the conclusion that you must protect them at every stage. Because you don't trust the provider, you don't trust the entities with which the consumer engages. However, if you move from the assumption that an economy isn't a zero-sum game, that it isn't a lose-win situation, but it is actually I bring something to the table that I can, and you bring something to the table, and we decide what is a fair value of exchange, then you get to a point where you go, perhaps these bakers don't want to kill their customers. Perhaps they genuinely just want to ensure that what they offer is of a quality and a price that is convincing to the consumer to buy, so that tomorrow they come for another bread, or next week they come for another bread. It's the same thing with sort of the big pharma. Yes, of course, there are many, many questions that you can ask of these massive industries. But at the end of the day, people who sell stuff, who sell goods and services, want the people to come back. That is a healthy economic model. And the moment you go from that point of departure, where you understand that, look, we're not, the economy doesn't have to be a battle for resources. It is actually the ability of people to offer and earn. Then you can say, look, guys, how about we don't overdo the regulation stuff? But if you start from, these bastards, they're going to try every trick in the book to screw over the consumer, the bread buyer needs the state to step in, well, then obviously you're going to land in this province. And I think it's revealing of the ideology that really lurks behind these suffocating but benevolent sounding policies.
Precisely. Anyway, that's all the time we have for today. We hope you found this show interesting. We will be back tomorrow. That's a wrap. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.